there's a handout.
If you don't have one, let me know. I'll be glad to bring you one. And with that, Brother Jerry.
Well, dear brethren, what we here hope to cover today will be four particular points. What preceded and precipitated the fall of Jerusalem and Israel's dispersion to Babylon, yet with hope and promise of returning to the temple? Who was Cyrus? And the forces that would conquer Babylon. Thirdly, prophetic events and dating of the fall of Babylon as linking the crossroads between Bible and secular history and chronology. And finally, the importance of Israel, of the Cyrus decree and the greater than Cyrus now. Brethren, you know, we often get lost in the details of a lesson and sometimes miss the essential point. So I want to state this up front. While doubts surface on the credibility of the Volume 2 chronology and alternatives are being proposed, we want to here affirm the validity of the history and the chronology as presented by Brother Russell. That the Bible record consistently leads through all the kings of Judah, followed by 70 years of desolation of Jerusalem, leading us to King Cyrus, and that scripture and history linked to him as the connecting point for secular history to complete the 6,000 years to the greater liberator, the returned Christ, at the introduction of the millennium. So, if this point is made clear, you've got the point of the lesson today. And I think I'll move this just a little closer so that I don't miss the flipping of the mouse and was a little strange. Long before Cyrus were some words from Jeremiah. They were penned from Egypt after he was carried out of Israel along with the fleeing remnant of revolutionaries after the death of Gedaliah. The remainder were taken to Babylon, yet here was a promised thread of hope for one day to return from Babylon. And so we find in Jeremiah 50 these words, "They shall ask the way to Zion with their faces towards thitherward, saying, Come and let us join ourselves to the Lord, to a perpetual covenant that will not be forgotten. My people hath been lost sheep. Their shepherds have caused them to go astray. They have turned them away from the mountains. They have gone from the mountain to hill and have forgotten their resting place. Remove out of the midst of Babylon and go forth out of the land of Chaldeans and be as the goats before the flocks." Jeremiah had witnessed the rise of Babylon, the great power with roots way back in history. Sadly, Israel had forgotten the God who brought them forth out of Egypt and the spirit of the Mosaic Law. The Lord was about to allow them to learn the full consequences of their wayward course. The Spirit of the Lord was transporting the mind of Jeremiah to a time beyond his day and this sad hour of Israel's history. Israel's long removal from Babylon was just beginning. He was given a glimpse to the time when this process would be reversed. But because of the long years to ensue, many would forget their way back to Zion by another generation of visionaries. Jeremiah had the writings of Isaiah from more than a century earlier than himself. The clues are in Isaiah chapter 13 with a message for the Babylon of his day and the Babylon of the last days. Here are a few verses beginning in chapter 1, in the 13th chapter, verses 1, 4, 5, 11, and 13. The burden of Babylon, which Isaiah the son of Amoz did see, the noise of a multitude in the mountains, like as a great people, a tumultuous noise of the kingdoms of nations gathered together. The Lord of hosts mustereth the host of battle to battle. They come from a far country, from the ends of heaven, even the Lord and the weapons of his indignation to destroy the whole land. Therefore I will shake the heavens, and earth shall remove out of her place, in the wrath of the Lord of hosts, in the day of his fierce anger. Behold, the Lord says in verse 17, I will stir up the Medes against them. What a remarkable prophecy. For the time of these words, the Medes were themselves a subject people under the Assyrians, and Persia was not even a major empire or considered in the days of Isaiah. Yet Isaiah revealed the name of the man that would rise from Persia, surpass Media, and then form an alliance with those Medes to the end of Israel's 70 years with Babylon. Every few centuries, there appears on the stage of history one who truly makes a difference for humanity. The coming of Cyrus resulted in the downfall of Babylon and the recovery of Israel. Again, in Isaiah chapter 45, the prophet was prompted to speak of Cyrus as the Lord's anointed, his Messiah, or in the Greek version of the scriptures, his Christ. Isaiah 45, 1 to 4. Thus saith the Lord to his anointed, to Cyrus, whose right hand I have holden, to subdue nations before him, and I loose the loins of kings, to open before him the two-leaved gates, and the gates shall not be shut. I will go before thee, and make the crooked places straight. I will break in pieces the gates of brass, and cut in sunder the bars of iron, and I will make thee the treasure of darkness. I will give thee the treasures of darkness and hidden riches in secret places, that thou mayest know that I, the Lord, which call thee by thy name, I am the God of Israel. For Jacob my servant's sake, and Israel mine elect, I have even called thee by thy name. I have surnamed thee, though thou knowest not, hast not known me. The prophetic Cyrus was not even yet born in Isaiah's day. Cyrus was born about 580 BC, some 250 years after Isaiah, then rose to power in the shadow of the Medes. Then he turned away from Media and formed his own Persian kingdom. With intermarriages, he formed an alliance known as the Medo-Persian Empire. He was a Persian king for 30 years, from 559 BC to 529 BC. So revealing his name before his birth is no reason to doubt the Isaiah text. The Greek form of the name Cyrus is Kyrios, meaning Lord. In Persian, it has the meaning of like the sun. Here is the Lord's anointed for the prophetic work. Here was the God of the Jews calling him his shepherd and promising him victory over Babylon and deliverance of Israel. But the Lord was, of course, using Cyrus to demonstrate his own great wisdom, foresight, and power over the kings of the earth. So now, Jeremiah lived to see his people taken and the land desolated for their unfaithfulness according to the prophecies. The land must now enjoy its designated Sabbaths because Israel neglected the ordinance of Sabbaths and Jubilees. Jeremiah watched from afar, but he didn't live to see this Cyrus who was revealed to Isaiah. Still, his own prophetic vision forecast the judgment upon the oppressor of his people. Babylon would be overthrown, his people delivered by the great Cyrus. Their release from Babylon and return to their own land was a remarkable period in history, yet not half so remarkable as the greater deliverance it prefigured. A deliverance in this our day. Only the ruined walls of Babylon remained in the days of the Apostle John on Patmos. Yet in vision he saw another Babylon rise again. He watched a further captivity take place, and then a wonderful reversal of these events under the direction of another anointed of Jehovah, the Christ, of whom Cyrus was but a figure. As Jeremiah saw the rise of that ancient power of Babylon, so the John class of this age, the church, saw the rise of the same old system of religious and temporal power, only in a new, more formidable form. Alexander Hislop, in his book, The Two Babylons, demonstrated just how apt the title of Babylon is to describe the great church-state system of another age. The great papal system made war against the saints and overcame them, just as did Nebuchadnezzar against the Jews of old. Let us walk through the events of this ancient transfer of power and see how those bound by the rivers of Babylon found their freedom, and how the greater than Cyrus has freed his people in these end times. Here was a man of courage, determination, and even faith in his destiny. The principal historical sources for information come to us from the Greek historians Herodotus, Xenophon, and Ctesias, who lived in the 5th century BC, within earshot of the very events of which they wrote. Here is what we can piece together as an authentic and in accord with the scriptures. After his destiny, after his dynasty was recognized in Asia Minor, Cyrus moved westward to subdue the last holdouts against his domain. Babylon and its supporters was the first universal empire of Nebuchadnezzar's dream of glory. In Daniel's dream, of the ram and the Persian horn, ram's horn, came, one of those horns became higher than the Median horn. Cyrus the Persian came against the Babylonian Empire. For a short time, he arranged a co-regency to coexist with Media, who would soon die of its own accord and pass away. Yet it is regarded as the Medo-Persian Empire. It was shown in the chest and the two arms of silver in the great image, and as the ram with two horns in Daniel 8, chapter verse 3. But one horn was higher than the other. It occupied the world stage for 200 years until Alexander the Great of Greece superseded Persia. Early in the year that we reckon to be 540 BC, Cyrus stood at the gates of that last western frontier. But Babylon was not invaded immediately. This year was spent in consolidating the allies, the resources, and securing vows of support, and removing the last resistance for a final assault on the fortress of Babylon. Briefly, here are some of the events of this year. I don't want us to get lost in history, but it can be confirmed. And here are just a few excerpts from these historians. Then the Carinians fell into strife and civil war with one another. They were entrenched in strongholds, and both sides called upon Cyrus for assistance. We will not read so much more. Cyrus, leaving behind a large garrison of foot soldiers, started with from Sardis in company with Carausus, and he stood with him many wagons loaded with valuables of every sort. On the way to Babylon, he subdued greater Phrygia and Cappadocia and reduced the Arabians into submission. From all these, he secured armor for not less than 40,000 Persian horsemen. And thus he arrived before Babylon with a great host of cavalry. These are the records of history. Now coming to the year that we know as 539, there is much to do before entering the city under the gates. Nearly another year is used to construct a grand strategy. And so we continue with Xenophon's history. He writes, when they had encamped, Cyrus called together his staff officers and said, friends and allies, we have viewed the city on every side, but I am sure I cannot see how anyone could take by storm walls so massive and high. But does not this river flow through the midst of the city? And so the city is better defended by the river than by its walls. And now a grand strategy ensued. Accordingly, he took measurements in a circle round about the city and began on either side of the city to dig an immense ditch. laying his foundations with the trunks of date palms. At last the ditches were completed. A certain festival had come around in Babylon, during which all Babylon was accustomed to drink. Cyrus took a large number of men, just as soon as it was dark, and opened up the heads of the trenches at the river. As soon as this was done, the water flowed down through the ditches in the night. When the problem of the river was thus solved, Cyrus gave orders to his Persian colonels, infantry, and cavalry to marshal their regiments two abreast and come to him, and the rest of the allies to follow in their rear down as before. And he bade his allies, both foot and horse, get unto the dry channel of the river and see if it is possible to march in the bed of the river. My friends, he said, let us therefore enter in with dauntless hearts, fearing nothing. When they are all wide awake and sober and fully armed, we cannot take them. But whereas we are going to fall upon them at a time when many of them are asleep, many drunk, and none of them in battle array, and when they find out that we are on the inside of the walls, and in their panic fright, they will be much more helpless still than they are now. Well, brethren, you know the rest of the story, and is confirmed by histories in great detail, of which we have only sampled a few words. Here is the historical precedent of Jesus' words in Matthew 24 and Revelation 18. The thief and householder, and the sentence upon mystical Babylon. Daniel 5 records Belshazzar's feasting. And when the fingers of a man's hand mysteriously appeared and wrote unintelligible letters on the plaster wall, when the astrologers and magicians could not discern the meaning, Daniel was called before the king and promised a golden chain, a royal robe, and the third ruler in the kingdom if he could divine the meaning. But Daniel declined the offer and said for him to keep his gifts and give the rewards to others. Still, Daniel gave the meaning, numbered, numbered, weighed, divided. Thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. That night, the Cyrus forces entered the city on October 29 without resistance and slew this magistrate. But why is victory given to the Medes and the Persians? And why does Daniel 5, verse 31, say, and Darius the Mede took, or as in the Hebrew renders, received the kingdom, being about 62 years old? Well, the Cyrus operations were not independent of Media. And there is a clue in the correct Hebrew rendering. Darius the Mede received the kingdom. He was not the military general and the strategist. That was Cyrus. But he received the appointment and recognition in sharing the throne. As noted by Keel and DeLeach, Barnes, Clark, Gill, JFB, and several others, Cyrus had previously risen to fame, not by mastering and subduing the Medes, but by striking a coalition by marriage of a Median daughter, and thus sealing an agreement of honor as long as his uncle, by marriage, should live. So Cyrus was the Persian, Darius was the Mede. It seems Cyrus's own father, Cambyses, did the same in marrying the Median daughter of Astyages. Students of the text say this was Cyaxares, son of Astyages, king of Media, and maternal uncle to Cyrus, who allowed him the title of his conquests as long as he lived. This was the biblical Darius, the Mede, who was allowed rulership to continue his title while Cyrus the Persian consolidated his kingdom. Darius was 62 years old, while Cyrus was but 41 years old. Darius and Cyrus were not the same person, as we noted in Daniel 8, verse 3. The two horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher came up last. So this Cyrus the Persian horn would surpass the Darius Median horn. Daniel proposed in both the reigns of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus, and prospered in these times, Daniel 6, verse 28. Daniel prospered in both the reigns. So we have a biblical eyewitness to these events. And we notice in Daniel 9, verses 1 and 2, that only the first year of this Darius, of his rule in Babylon, is recorded as the son of Ahasuerus, being the title for the Median Astyages. His son, Cyaxares, that we know with a biblical name, Darius. Notice the expression that he was made or appointed king over the realm. This is the same as having received the kingdom in chapter 5, verse 31. This was part of the wisdom of Cyrus, who was biding his own time. Darius was part of the old family. So here is how I understand the family trees, and it probably doesn't need a lot of detailed sidetracking. But for this reason, many students note the words of Xenophon in his Cyclopedia of History, where he says, as they continued their march and came near Media, Cyrus turned aside to visit Cyaxares. The first thing Cyrus told Cyaxares was that a place had been selected for him in Babylon and his official headquarters, so that he might occupy a residence of his own whenever he should come. Cyaxares then introduced him to his daughter, who brought him a golden crown and bracelet and a necklace and the most beautiful Median robe that could be found. As the princess placed the crown on Cyrus's head, Cyaxares said, And the maiden herself, my own daughter, I offer you as well, Cyrus, to be your wife. Your father married my father's daughter, whose son you are, and with her I offer you all Media as a dowry, for I have no legitimate male issue. The The city walls of Babylon fell in 539. This is a point that is often mentioned in history, that Babylon fell in 539. But it was a coalition. Cyrus was the general, but Darius was the aging monarch. 539. So how do we come to 536? Darius assumed the throne as a weak caretaker in a transition government. His counselors arranged for Daniel's night with the lions. You recall the account of Daniel in the lion's den in chapter 6. His first year covered most of what we call our calendar year 538. Daniel 9, verse 2, records that he now understood by the book the number of 70 years for the desolations of Jerusalem. Not the captivity, but the desolations of Jerusalem. The land must rest for longer than any 50-year jubilee, of which they had earlier neglected or compromised. It was resting for 70 years for both those only inadequately kept in the past, plus the remainder jubilees until the true Messiah would introduce the millennial Sabbath with a release from bondage. A full second year is never ascribed to Darius in history or in the Bible. As Daniel had nothing more to record of his second year, it is noted that this older of the two rulers died and never completed a full second year in Babylon. For this reason, Jewish history considers the first year of Cyrus as a sole regency in Babylon, beginning late in 537 until the autumn or the fall of 536. It was with this first inaugural year that Cyrus made his amnesty decree of Ezra 1:1-4. And 2 Chronicles 36, 22 and 23. It was a banner year for the Jews. They call this the first year of Cyrus. Numerous historians mark the significance of this event in this year. Here is one of them, many historical reference from Easton's Bible Dictionary. And we quote, "The first year of Cyrus," Ezra 1, verse 1, "is not the year of his elevation to power over the Medes, nor over the Persians, nor the year of the fall of Babylon, but the year succeeding 2 years during which Darius the Mede was viceroy in Babylon after its fall. At this time only, in 536, Cyrus became actual king over Palestine, which became part of the Babylonian Empire. The edict of Cyrus for the rebuilding of Jerusalem marked a great epoch in the history of the Jewish people." And he cites 2 Chronicles 36 and Ezra, the first chapter. So, brethren, it had been more than 3 years since Cyrus first marched into the Empire of Babylon. This year of Cyrus was the linchpin between all biblical dating and subsequent secular history. It is used as a reliable date in history beyond which the Bible does not give us direct links. Perhaps this slide is one of the most notable in our lesson today. You'll recognize the page from Volume 2, in which all biblical history carries from Adam up through the flood, covenant with Abraham, the Exodus, the judges, the kings, and finally 70 years of desolation. So the essence of this picture is that after 536, the Bible does not give us any more connecting links. We have biblical history leading to Cyrus, after which secular history continues with some consistency. It's the connecting point. If we do not recognize Cyrus as the connecting point and revise earlier points or try to connect with some other fictitious point in history, then all the chronology lines lose their validity. The linchpin between Bible and subsequent history. Now it will be noted that this first year of the sole regency of Cyrus is regarded in the Hebrew archives as the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, Ezra 1, verse 1. This verse introduces the records that were also a part of the state documents of Persia. Verses 2 through 4 record the amnesty decree allowing Jews in Babylon to return to Jerusalem and to rebuild the temple. It became the legal document that surfaced some years later in the Persian library under another Darius, Darius Hystaspes, when fear and oppression stopped the work for a time. Those events are recorded in Ezra, the fourth chapter, the fifth and the sixth chapter. The account in 2 Chronicles 36, 18 through 22, begin with first removing the vessels of the burning temple until the decree to restore those vessels and restore the temple. This window of time between the burning of the temple under Nebuchadnezzar until its restoration is said, and we quote, to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, until the land had enjoyed her Sabbaths, for as long as she lay desolate, she kept Sabbath, to fulfill 70 years. 70 years. Jeremiah prophesied of 70 years for faulty Sabbaths, recorded in Jeremiah 25, verse 11, and Jeremiah 29, 10. And the desolation of Jerusalem for Sabbath failure is also noted in Jeremiah 17, verse 27, and Jeremiah 34, 17 and 22. So Chronicles says there was 70 years to fulfill this vision of Jeremiah. Now I know that these texts have been also microanalyzed for all the Hebrew grammatical forms of verbs, articles, prepositions, and so forth, and separating the prophecies into some different kinds of 70 years. But regardless of the efforts to accommodate secular history and pagan records, I see Jeremiah's prophecies consistent with the singular divine judgments of Leviticus 26:33-35, and that the state records of Chronicles in Persia were that the decree of Cyrus was to complete a singular judgment of 70 years against the land, the throne, and the population. These 70 years extend to the rule, through the rule of Darius, and reach to the singular sole regency of Cyrus. I know it has been customary to search further back in history and consider perhaps some other ancient secular dates and also reliable that might be reliable and form other events to reason that some Bible accounts should maybe be read differently. These propose a shorter time for the desolating of the land until Cyrus, or a shorter period of the judges, or fewer years in the kings of Israel. But Christ returned at the right year in the chain of history and prophecy that begins the 7,000 years, the seventh day. And so end time events confirms the steps that lead to it. When we look at the end prophecies, it confirms the path that reached to it. Christ is the Lord of the Sabbath, the greater than Cyrus, has also returned to us just 6,000 years since the eviction and exile from Eden that began human bondage to the prince of this world. The times of restitution occur at the antitypical Jubilee, the greater Sabbath. I am convinced that just as ancient Cyrus was the turning point between the sacred chain of history and the prophetic link to the secular record, the antitypical Cyrus has now returned and is the link between the past secular history that has now introduced the grand prophetic Sabbatic year, the year of Jubilee, the sacred millennial day. We are not saying that those who regard a future seventh day would place his return as future. However, we see these events are connected. We understand that times of restitution begin with the seventh millennium, the year of Jubilee. Apostle Peter described this day in his second letter, chapter 3, as the day of his parousia, the day when the ecclesiastical heavens of the civil earth pass, and the judgmental fires begin, while they are willingly ignorant of the cause and the presence of the greater Cyrus. Peter saw this day of the Lord as a singular prophetic day. But beloved, be not ignorant of this one thing, that one day with the Lord is as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as one day. He was looking toward this day in which the heavens are dissolved and bringing in a new heavens and a new earth wherein dwelleth righteousness. Not only it will be righteous, but righteousness will prevail. Truth will purge the darkness. He does not see it as 2 days, or 2,000-year periods, or anything more or less than a singular 1,000 years. The book of Jeremiah opens in the last 11th year of Zedekiah. And he prophesies in chapter 1, verse 10, I have this day set over thee the nations and over the kingdoms to root out and to pull down and to deliver and destroy and to throw down and to build and to plant. It is the work of one day to both destroy and to plant. At first, he is just seen as the general of Jehovah, but he is the real power of the new kingdom. The householder did not know what to do with this intruder, but felt secure within his walls. The supposed thief came in an hour that surprised the adversary. His house is being broken up. He used just 3.5 years in gathering his allies and associates while the world could only see the aging kingdoms of this world. He delivered a message in Revelation 18, 2 through 4. Babylon the Great is fallen, and has become the habitation of devils, and the hold of every foul spirit, and the cage of every unclean and hateful bird. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, Come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. So it has been since 1878. But then this same antitypical Cyrus, the anointed, exercised his singular power of the throne. Here is the greater call and release foreseen by Isaiah and Jeremiah for the Jews to flee Babylon. When the new king sat on his throne, the Israelites indeed could return to their homeland, rebuild the temple with gold and silver vessels of divine truths. A small beginning even began in 1878 with the return to Petah Tikva, but the process continues. The seven angels came out of the antitypical temple, clothed in white linen and with the seven last plagues. Under his rule, the apocalyptic plagues complete the drive. Divine wrath and dry up the rivers of Euphrates, that the way of the kings of the east might be prepared, just as Cyrus did. Revelation 16:12. And the seventh trumpet. The kingdom of this world has become our Lord's and is anointed because he has taken his great power and reigned. Why? What is the result? The nations are angry and the dead are judged. The saints are rewarded and the destroyers of the earth are destroyed. Revelation 11, 15 to 18. It is the day of the Lord. All this could not happen until the Lord of the Sabbath returned to administer this new day. Dear brethren, we are living in grand and awesome times. When I was young, I heard the old timers say that we are awake and watching the dawn of a new day with the sun rising, while the world sleeps in the darkness of their own nightmares. It is later than they think, or they want it to be, but you are awake. we see our king is marching on. He has arrived at the times of restitution with healing in his wings for all those who will welcome back the king. The resurrection of the sleeping saints are awakened. But for those who do not accept the king, he is felt as a flaming sword. Such was also the lot of those who either bow to Cyrus or those who do not. It inspired me to watch the signs of this new day and to rejoice. Yet there are those who may question if it is earlier or if it is later than we thought. Some said we woke up too soon. The new day has not yet arrived. We are still waiting for the new day. They say maybe the millennial day has not yet begun. If Jesus is Lord of the Sabbath, maybe he has arrived before the Sabbath. Is the year of Jubilee not quite here yet? I am not of that persuasion. Yes, it is introduced with trauma on the old order. But the arm of Jehovah is also the king who is introducing the new order. The king is at his gates. Even all Israel is not aware yet that it is the Lion of the tribe of Judah that has opened the way. Even spiritual Israel are not all aware of the new king and his kingdom. Some are still waiting for the sunlight to flood the earth. Others are awake as the sun is already rising. Some are waiting for the sunlight to flood the earth. Others see that it has already begun. So it is not earlier than you thought, nor are we still waiting for the dawn of the millennial day. It has come. Now it is not altogether without notice that the greater than Cyrus returned in 1874. In 3.5 years of his presence as king, he took his great power to reject the house of Babylon in 1878. And just as Israel had endured 70 years removal from the land, so from 1878, there were also 70 more years in returning them from the diaspora to possess their land in 1948. It is later than some think. 6 days are past. The seventh day is already rising with the Jubilee trumpet. As with King David, as he defeated his enemies, waited in Hebron, where some of his own stood with him, while others questioned his kingship, which really had already begun. Be not the last to welcome back the king. David's reign is counted from his anointing in Hebron, and not later when the nation decided they could accept him and move to Jerusalem. The world will soon enough accept the new king, but he was reigning before they knew it. The greater than Cyrus has entered the gates and upset the drunken tables of Babylon, just as he did in the first advent. He has made his decree to flee Babylon and return to his temple with the vessels of present truth. The Lord of the Sabbath is ushering in the grand Sabbatic year. 6 days are past. The year of Jubilee has come. Let us carefully bear the vessels of the Lord with the sacred truths once delivered to the saints and now restored to Zion. The harvest message of present truth is in those vessels.